Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights-on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the
Obama, mind. Obama, he just wants to hurt you. Wants you to feel his pain. You heard Hagel talk about how he understands the pain the shutdown caused the American people. He was responding to questions about the fact that Obama's government shutdown included our government not paying out death benefits to our military. Who agrees with me that refusing to pay death benefits to our military is an unconscionable default of one of our most sacred responsibilities, taking care of those we ask to lay their lives on the line and give their lives up to protect ours? A responsibility that goes way beyond defaulting on the national debt, don't you think? Who is to blame and who gets the blame? The Dems knew they had the MSM in their back pocket. Something like 41%, I think, of the talking heads blamed Republicans, while I don't believe any blame the Dems, except for the 17% who blame both. Now, you have to understand Washington. Their world is MSM. What happens on MSM is what is happening in the world for these people. Reminds me of Elvis, whose only windows in his room were TV screens. So when they see the media reporting 280 times on the shutdown misery stories that are all slanted against the GOP, as compared to something like, 20 suggesting both parties are to blame, well, they just smile and watch as the Republicans charge the wall, you know. Why does this happen, huh? Why can't the Republicans win sometimes? Obama recently smirked, let them go win an election. Let's look at this for a moment. Now, I'm not a strategist for the GOP. In fact, I'm disgusted with that crowd, especially that one in California. However, I like Ted Cruz. I have respect for Rubio, Paul Rand, some others. But look, here's the problem. These guys have to fight their own party while they're fighting the Dems. The GOP is divided and their house is falling. Some are calling it a civil war within the party. Arguments over who started the war continue. It began with Reagan. It began earlier with Goldwater. And even then, the blue-blood GOP aristos were not comfortable with Reagan, you know. But they could see that he was their ticket to political power, their meal ticket, so to speak. And that did open the door for some real conservatives to get in and get rooted. But after Reagan, the GOP aristos began slowly working to marginalize the conservatives with the theory that moderation was the way to go. You know, it'd be a centrist, that sort of thing. And the problem is that the moderate and the centrist strategy is surrender to the Dems every time. For some of the GOP aristos, the whole thing is a game of poker played with cards close to the chest, a stoic expression waiting to be dealt the right cards to make their move, or watching for the best opportunity to play off a bluff. And as far as they're concerned, at present, the cards are just falling in favor of the Dems. But, you know, that happens in cycles, and they know that eventually odds are it'll turn in their favor. So they just fold a bad hand and throw it in and wait for the next deal to come along. So they don't see the issues as being critical to the future of the country, and you've got to understand that. They don't get it. One wonders if they even care about the country. They're so myopic and so centered on their party. Another group actually wants a more liberal bent in the GOP. I mean, it's their agenda. They want to step away from the social conscience issues. But the problem is that those of us who care about those issues know that the Dems and the liberal courts are social issues activists. And if the GOP does not take and hold the line on these issues, well, those of us in this country who do care about these things will have no voice at all in government. We hardly have any voice as it is. I mean, even when we use our constitutional power to make laws through initiative, the social issues activists, both in the legislature and the government and so on in California, and in the courts, all the people that hold important positions of power, simply steamroll over us and push their agenda anyway. Now think about that, my GOP friends. Those in the party who resent the social conscience issues having any significant influence in the party. Listen, America. If the GOP does finally completely forsake the social conscience issues, that's abortion, promotion of sodomy in our culture, encouraging immorality, and so on, the American voters who do care about these things will have no voice in government, because the left is very aggressive in using political power and influence to advance their moral agenda. Now hear this. The left is very aggressive in using political power to advance their moral agenda, okay? And at the same time, they insidiously work to encourage the right to step away from moral issues, and they castigate them if they desire to use political power to advance their moral agenda. You know, then it's all about forcing your morality on others, right? The fact is, the only people in this country right now who are forcing their version of morality on the rest of Americans are the left. They're the ones forcing their morality. Let's call it immorality. In the schools, in legislating their immorality from the bench, in encouraging immorality in our culture politically through legislation and government policies. Anyway, what this has created is a situation where the true champions of conservatism in the GOP are having to fight their own party while they fight the Dems. So no wonder they're having a difficult time. Obama is right. We've got to go out there and win some elections. Of course, his notion that since Dems have the White House and the Senate, that therefore the Republican-controlled House ought to just shut up and go along. You know, after all, we won. That's the way he plays his little game. You know, that, of course, has never been the attitude on the left when the right is in control of most of the government. Yeah, but we've gotten used to it. Lying, unfairness, these jokers. We expect this kind of thing from the president. But Republicans need to understand that giving in to everything the enemy wants is not a strategy for success. Folks, surrender is not a strategy for victory. Of course, I understand a strategic retreat. I suppose you could call the effort on the part of the conservatives to in the GOP to offer Obama a trade-off. You know, a one-year continuing resolution to fund the government for a one-year pause on the implementation of Obamacare. You could call that a strategic retreat, perhaps. But Obama's not going to negotiate, and he said up front he wasn't going to negotiate. He wasn't going to give up anything from his side. He said that he wouldn't give up anything even if it meant a shutdown. See, but he's not blamed for the shutdown. And by the way, Obama is perfectly happy with the shutdown because that works to his favor. Obama's all bring it on, you know, and his team gets it. Attitude reflects leadership. So down line, they all have the same attitude, same approach. Everyone in his team knew exactly what to do. They inflicted as much pain during the shutdown as they could where we would feel it most. And when I say we, I mean we, conservatives. The shutdown happened and Obama smiled. Gotcha. Then he proceeded to make certain the conservatives felt as much pain as possible and that they were insulted over and over and over again. And you know about all that. I've never in my life seen a president who acted so totally and completely one-sided and partisan in his behavior and everything that he does. Everything. I mean, even his speeches. Obama is quite literally not the president of America. He is the leader of a political party, period, and represents only those who voted for him. You see this all the time with Obama. And again, I've never seen such a president as this. Obama is not the president of conservatives, so far as he's concerned. They lost the election and therefore have no part in governing. That's his attitude. Either this is a woeful lack of understanding of our form of government, or a purpose and calculated measure in his effort to transform America, apparently, into some banana republic run by a dictator. Now, he says he will not defend or implement DOMA. Remember that? The law of the land. Oh, yes, it was the law of the land. But he tells everyone else they need to bow to Obamacare because it's the law of the land. I want you to know that I deeply resent that kind of leadership. It's thugocracy. I'm disgusted by this man. He openly declares he will not defend or support the law of the land when he disagrees with that law. But then he has the outrageous audacity and hubris, the arrogance, to look at those who oppose Obamacare and say, hey, it's the law of the land, you have to support it. When I think of this president and the way he has conducted himself in office, I think of Elisha meeting Ahab. When Elisha said, were it not for the presence of Jehoshaphat, whom I respect, I would not even look at you, Ahab. I would not so much as even see you. I heard a great preacher, one of my friends, say last night, that if the president, speaking of Obama, called and said he wanted to have lunch with you, even though you don't like his policies, I'm sure you would agree and come to see him. Well, I had to think about that one. I respect the office, but I want to go on record right now and say I have no respect at all for that man, as a leader or as president or even as a man. I consider him to be a liar and a usurper to the office. And any man that could vote against the Born Alive Protection Act, I'm sorry. I just cannot relate to that kind of cold, murderous heart. So what do you do about 1 Timothy 2, 1 and 2 when you're a Christian and we're told to pray for kings and all who are in authority? Well, I'll tell you what I do. I pray for him. I pray he'll come to the knowledge of the truth, which is what God wants for him. In fact, listen, Sunday night, 6 p.m. at the Lighthouse, I'm preaching a message on how to pray for our rulers. It's going to be a biblical answer to the question. I think you'll love it. Obama knew he could offer delays in the implementation of Obamacare to his union buds. He could offer delays to his political partners and pals. and then ignore the rest of us, because the rest of us don't matter to this president. I mean, the rest of us that understands Obamacare is not free health care. That rest of us. You do understand, don't you, that Obama's constituents support Obamacare for the same reason many of them voted for him. You know, remember, he was going to pay their mortgage, he was going to buy them new TVs, and he was going to send them money in the mail. They think they're getting free health care. Government-run health care is going to be a lot of things, but it is certainly not going to be free. Okay, I got to close the first segment. The rollout has been a disaster. You do realize, of course, that there is a God in heaven, and unlike many in the GOP, he does not feel any need to concern himself with compromising with Obama or anyone else for that matter. We cannot ask for a better illustration of just where your health care is going in the hands of these clowns. If they can't even handle enrolling you into the program, how do you expect them to handle the program? The government is asking for patience while they take over America's future patients. Bad pun. They're overtaxing our patients. Government calls for patience. You try to enroll in government health care, and immediately, first thing that happens, well, you're sent into the waiting room. Isn't that beautiful? Your nightmare is just beginning. And of course, these are the least of the problems you have coming. But more of that when I get back. Folks, I've gone a bit long in this segment. We're going to skip the break and just roll right along.
Stand by. Five, the Brain four, Massage Show three, is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Paul Revere's Lantern Lighter here, lighting the lamps in the Church of Belfry Arch, signaling the enemies on the march, an enemy that would steal from us our liberty. Hey, the Obamacare rollout is a divine blessing. It's a warning of what you have to look forward to with government-controlled health care. Inept, bungling nonsense. But friend, I remind you, the government's ineptness to handle anything efficiently beyond the responsibilities Jesus Christ authorized government to take care of, as defined in Romans 13:1-6, Bible thump alert, all angry atheists are hereby forewarned. Those of you who suffer, quote, headaches and depression, anxiety and mental pain and anguish, end quote, at the very existence of the ground zero cross, and so are suing, are hereby warned. I am about to quote from the Bible. You know that book George Washington laid his hand upon when he was sworn in as the first president of the United States of America? The book our founders quoted more often than any other single book, the book that declares, now wait for it, by the way, you might need to grab your oxygen, grab your sack, and get ready to breathe in it. You're likely to hyperventilate. I'm about to use the most powerful word in the world. I mean this word. It sends shivers down the spines of all spineless liberals. Maybe I can help you prepare. We'll do a little experiment. Muhammad. How'd that hit you? You okay? Your heart didn't start racing, didn't palpitations, anything like that? Good. Let's try another one. Buddha for some of you. No discomfort? Good. No anxiety? No headache? No mental anguish? Okay, so you've had plenty of fair warning, so don't get mad at me if this makes you mad. The Bible that declares Jesus Christ is Lord. Uh-oh, man, there it goes, all freaked out, torqued out, as my dad would say. Have you ever stopped to ask yourself why people react the way they do to that simple name? It's weird, because otherwise everyone wants to claim it. But they don't want you praying in the name publicly or declaring that name as an authority. Anyway, there are a few verses Nimrod's followers actually like. That is, at least until they find out what these verses actually say. And here's one of those passages, Romans 13:1-7. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. Oh, Nimrod's like that. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou not then be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger, to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. End quote. You see, the divine ordaining authority behind the power of government is Jesus Christ, who after he rose from the dead said, all power is given unto me in heaven and on earth. Okay, and he has authorized that power to serve God for good. Now, I'm making a point here. Follow along. Then Jesus defines the authorized use of this power. Quote, a revenger to execute wrath upon the evildoer, end quote. Don't you find it interesting that when the government of this nation under God uses its power according to its divinely appointed authorized purpose, well, it does very well. It's efficient. It's effective to the purpose. But just about everything else the government attempts to do fails. It's terribly inefficient and miserably ineffective, except in oppressing the people. Now, governments are always good at that. They are devilishly effective in the work of taking away your liberties. Now, I know, my friends, you are, like me, probably sick and tired of the GOP caving in. But, you know, interestingly enough, Obama really has given us the best advice. He said, let them go win some elections. Now, I think we should take him up on that and aggressively primary every white flag-waving Republican you know and get some red, white, and blue-waving Republicans in there, shall we? You know, the yahoos that surrendered to Obama, those white flag-waving Republicans, everyone that voted to give in to the president. Otherwise, you're going to have the same crowd handling your health care that bungled Benghazi. You saw the latest Jay Carney meltdown, I think. A reporter actually challenged him. This is beginning to happen from time to time these days. One reporter pointed out the latest revelation that a press release from the government expressed concern about heightened terrorist alert on September the 10th, the day before the Benghazi attack. Of course, they didn't use the word terrorist, you understand. Anyway, all of our embassies and consulates and so forth were therefore alerted. Now, this raised questions over how much did the White House know before 9/11/12? You know, what did they know and when did they know it? Yeah, a little Watergate lingo there for Hillary. Coming back to bite you? Some of you might remember Hillary Clinton during the Watergate issue saying, what did they know and when did they know it? Well, now we want to know, Hillary, what did you know and when did you know it? So how much did they know before the attack? A press release dated September 10, the day before the Benghazi assassination of our ambassador, says the government anticipated heightened security risk on 9/11/12. Not just a general sort of no-duh 9/11 anniversary concerns that would be routine, but specific intel indicating terrorist activity planned for the anniversary of 9/11 in 2012. Now, a reporter asked Carney whether Obama would release memos and email correspondence during the days leading up to Benghazi. Carney got visibly irritated. You probably saw it. He made a snide remark about Fox News. He said, I know we are creating an exchange for Fox here, or something along those lines. And when the reporter said, this is not for Fox, it's for the record, and he pressed his question and clarified it, Carney walked off in a huff. It was so cute. These people are so petty. There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, challenge this presidency, and I dare you to do it. You just try to hold it accountable for anything, and that's the treatment you're going to get. Attitude reflects leadership. Carney's attitude is a perfect representation, a reflection of his boss. So, our attention swings back to Benghazi? We now know that they knew within 24 hours that the Benghazi assault was a terrorist attack and that it had nothing to do with any movie. That's a fact. So why isn't anyone pressing these people to answer a simple question? Why did they blame the movie? And why is that hapless fellow still in jail? Why wouldn't Obama release memos and email communications between staffers and so on the matter of Benghazi? Why would he classify that as top secret or something like that? What are these people trying to hide? What's Hillary hiding? What's Obama hiding? Should we impeach and remove the president alleged? Of course, that's been floating around for a long time out there, almost since he took oath. Palin's recent Facebook post, you know, where she says defaulting on the national debt is an impeachable offense, and for Obama to unilaterally raise the debt limit without Congress is also an impeachable offense. I assume she's talking about impeaching Obama. So I'm thinking if Congress holds the purse strings, how can defaulting on the debt be an impeachable offense for the president? I guess the idea she has is that if Congress sends him a bill to fund government and he refuses to sign it, that would be an impeachable offense. I don't know if the president ought to have any influence in the money part of this thing at all. Quite frankly, I can discuss that another time. They can separate all that out. It's interesting. But does anyone think this Congress will impeach this president? And if they did, does anyone think three quarters of the Senate would then vote for his removal from office? But consider the charges outlined by this Tea Party site that called for the impeachment of Obama. And I'm sort of quoting, paraphrasing, and so on. Anyway, they say he has purposely lied about the Benghazi atrocity, and he has instructed others to lie. He has intimidated whistleblowers who were guilty of nothing but a desire for justice and the truth. I've looked into this, and there is evidence supporting this allegation, but it has to be provable. But I do believe this is impeachable if provable. He has used taxpayer funds to run TV ads in Pakistan, pushing and promoting the lie that Benghazi attacks were caused by YouTube video. That's interesting. I didn't know that. That's disgusting. It's misguided. Surely a bad policy, but probably not impeachable. That's a high crime and misdemeanor. Because a sequester, I'm going on now with her allegations, because of sequester, so-called cuts, equating to an insignificant cut in the rate of growth of government spending, he closed White House tours to children while sending hundreds of millions of taxpayer funds to the known terrorist group Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, including giving them F-16s and tanks and so on. And again, disgusting, misguided, not impeachable, unless it can be shown the deal he made with Morsi included establishing the Muslim Brotherhood in control of the government of Egypt. Now, he has treated our foreign friends like enemies and rewarded our enemies as if they were our friends. Again, really, it's not impeachable, but it sure is disgusting. He has inflicted the nation with over 20,000 pages of incoherent rules, regulations, and mandates in the form of Obamacare, which for the first time in history gives the federal government the power to force its citizens to buy something that only the government approves of. Now, I agree. I believe that is that's impeachable, but you should impeach the president and everyone in the House, in either House, that voted for it. And that court, that entire court that said it's okay. Whole thing ought to be impeached and thrown out. He has divided the country like in no time in history since the Civil War. He has pitted men against women, gay people against straight people, and used un-American Marxist class warfare that has no place in a free America. He has caused racial strife by unjustifiably labeling anyone who disagrees with his USSR-style governance as a racist. All that's true, I think. Evidence supports it, but it doesn't fit the classification of high crimes and misdemeanors. He has degraded our people at every opportunity, apologizing for America on foreign soil. He's bowed to the Saudi prince, humiliating our nation. To the Mexican people, he blamed the American people for his illegal gun-running operation, Fast and Furious. He apologized to the Mexican people for U.S. sovereignty while inferring that the lower region of our country still belonged to them. That's all that's disgusting. If, in fact, it can be shown that Obama authorized a gun-running operation that gave guns to our nation's enemies, well, that could be impeachable. He has continually, on numerous occasions, abused the power of his office. He used executive privilege to cover up his regime's crimes in the Fast and Furious gun-running operation, and that's that one where the Obama regime gave guns to Mexican drug cartels. And it's alleged that he did all that in an attempt to later come back and attack the Second Amendment. Now, if there was, in fact, a cover-up, and he used his power in the execution of that cover-up, well, definitely that's impeachable. But you got to prove all this stuff. He has exploded the already gargantuan national debt, increasing it by approximately 60% during his term while insisting that we must spend even more. The Congress sets the budget. You can't impeach the president for that. He burned up $862 billion on a stimulus plan that was supposed to create shovel-ready jobs, right? Well, later he admits there was no such thing as a shovel-ready job. That's not impeachable unless you can prove he committed this farce with the intent to defraud the American people, which just seems believable to me from everything else I've seen from him, but you got to prove it. Now, he's promoted voter fraud at every possible occasion and failed to convict proven voter intimidation based upon the skin color of lawbreakers. Well, I think the evidence supports that, but you have to prove that he conspired against voter registration reform in order to commit fraud, voter fraud, or that he purposely set out to subvert the law. And that's the horse of a different color in Oz, you know. He has advertised and promoted America's food stamp program over Mexican airwaves to Mexican citizens in an attempt to swarm our country with millions more illegal aliens and further bankrupting our country with Cloward and Piven tactics. Oh, wow, you know, I didn't know this. I'm going to have to ask Barbara to help me research that and run it down to ground because, wow. But again, bad policy indeed, evil, wicked, you name it. But unless you can make a direct connection here between a conspiracy to subvert the nation's interests and that activity, you're not going to have something that rises to the level of an impeachable offense. He has sued several states, repeatedly stopping them from implementing the laws their citizens had approved, violating the 10th Amendment in the process, while completely obliterating the constitutional principle of state sovereignty. I do believe a case can be made here for intentionally using the powers of his office to violate the Constitution to circumvent the 10th Amendment specifically. He has unconstitutionally bypassed Congress at every turn by using the federal bureaucracy to inflict massive and crushing laws on our people. Now, present law is clear that he cannot violate or subvert the Constitution, must defend it and implement it, of course. And it does seem that some use of the executive orders on his part has effectively violated the Constitution. The president must not be allowed to use executive orders in a fashion that violates the Constitution. But whether an executive order does effectively violate a provision of the Constitution has to be vetted, and the body for that would probably have to be the Supreme Court. So anyway, I think it is impeachable if it can be shown to be a clear violation of the Constitution. Now, he has appointed dozens of unconstitutional czars, unchecked by any balance of powers, that have served no purpose but to harass. Now, a problem, indeed, something that must be in the future addressed, but not impeachable. He has attacked and tried to silence our once free press, even going to the extreme of instructing Americans which media sources they should listen to. Well, he can express his opinion on that matter. I think it's disgusting, and it goes to my point about him really not being our president. He's a president of just one faction of America. But nevertheless, if he took action to oppress the freedom of the press, that would be impeachable. He embarrassed and harmed our relationship with our ally, Great Britain, by sending an official U.S. delegation to a socialist dictator Hugo Chavez's funeral, and yet sent no one to the great defender of our liberty, the funeral of the great former British Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher. Now, isn't that petty? This calls for sanctions, I believe, against that man from the Congress. I really should do that. But it's not a crime for the president to be petty, to be rude, to be mean-spirited, or a communist sympathizer, for that matter. He's used tragedy and crisis to attack our constitutional freedoms, using the Sandy Hook shootings to infringe upon our non-negotiable Second Amendment rights. He used the Benghazi terrorist attacks, blaming them on the First Amendment, which would allow a YouTube video critical of Islam. Yeah, well, he did those things. And again, you begin to get the picture. These things are disgusting. And in a sane world, they would have gotten him thrown out on his ear in his second bid for office. But instead, the people voted him back in. So what are you going to say? Not impeachable. He has unconstitutionally attacked our sacred freedom of religion, a God-given right guaranteed by our founders in the First Amendment. Now, I think the Tea Party must be thinking of his actions as commander-in-chief of the military, handing down orders forbidding chaplains to pray in Jesus' name or threatening soldiers with Article 15 charges if they share their faith. And I believe that is impeachable. I think the commander-in-chief has no right to take away from our military the rights and liberties he asks them to lay down their lives to protect. I'm with you there. I think that's impeachable. Conclusion, we are therefore calling for his impeachment and removal from office. We urge you to join us for the good of our nation and to keep the legacy of our founding fathers alive. End quote and so on from the Tea Party. And you know, with most of that, much of that, I agree. I've got to close. Briefly, though, let me speak to this new movie, 12 Years a Slave. Now, there's a movie that's sure to inspire those black kids who think it's their job to avenge their enslaved ancestors. Even if they don't have any ancestors that were enslaved, they are black. The slaves in this country were black, and so it's their job to avenge them upon Whitey, even if that Whitey or that Whitey's ancestors never held a slave. You see, they're white, and that makes them responsible for what whites did, like them being black makes them responsible to avenge what happened to their black ancestors. So you see, it's racism, pure and simple. All this work we've done for all these years to get rid of racism, and what have we ended up with? Racism, pure and simple. And here's the thing. Actually, I likely want to see 12 Years a Slave. I enjoy historical films. Depends on its rating, of course. But I'm in favor of reminding every generation of the atrocities of slavery. I think it's important to remember the Holocaust. And likewise, I think it's important to remember slavery. It's just that we should also remember who stopped the Holocaust and who stopped slavery. Okay? Okay, I got to conclude. Mary Queen of Scots trembled at the prayers of John Knox. She said that she feared his prayers more than any standing army in the world. I want to ask you, my Christian friends, my Christian patriots, do our leaders fear the prayers of God's prophets today? They don't, do they? Well, Sunday night, I'm going to talk about why. At 6 o'clock Sunday night, we have nursery available, children's ministry available, and the whole works. So come on out. Calling all Brain Massage friends, please accept my invitation to our second annual Brain Massage Banquet. Succulent tri-tip meal. Everyone who attended last year commented on how delicious was the food and how friendly were those who served it. And this year, the door prize is awesome. Last year, remember, we took Biden's advice and we offered a 12-gauge Mossberg shotgun. This year, it's an AR-15. I'm not kidding you. An AR-15 will be given away as a door prize. You're going to love the show I'm preparing for the evening. That's right, a live performance of the Brain Massage Show. All sorts of other great fun plans. So call your reservation in today, 805-347-9887. That's 805-347-9887. Or you can call our toll-free 1-888-770-8000. 1-888-770-8000. I'll leave a message on our Brain Massage Listener Hotline. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. Now you call and let me know you see that they are on. And if you see the lights are on, you agree with what I'm saying, you call me. 1-888-770-8000 and say, lights on. All right, if you don't agree with me, you think I'm all out to lunch or ought to be, then call and say, lights off. The number is 1-888-770-8000, 1-888-770-8000, or go to our website, thebrainmassageshow.com. thebrainmassageshow.com. You'll have a place there on the right. Scroll down a little bit, and you'll see a place where you can write me a letter and let me know what you think about the Brain Massage Show or the Brain Masseur or whatever else is on your mind. If you will, please leave a message. Tell me what you think of the show, positive or negative. Either way, God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.